Well, so the topic that I'm supposed to speak on, I think, is something having to do with postmodernism and the halakhic response to scientific change or something of this nature.
Do you still have a copy of that?
Okay. Well, is Mel coming?
Who knows? Shia like that, something on the...
Well, we're going to have four or five shiurim on that subject. And I guess I'm going to... I mean, I should really talk about the subject for about 10 hours, and I'm limited there, I would imagine, to half an hour or something, so, or maybe an hour.
Or two.
Well, it's like a salami, you know, you can slice it as thick or as thin as you like. So let me tell you the background to what I'm going to do. When I was in Israel last, I was at my son's in Rehovot, and we davened in a different shul Friday night and a different shul Shabbos morning, and in both of those shuls they had in their library this multi-volume work, which is called Encyclopedia Hilchatit Refuit, Medical Halachic Encyclopedia, put out by Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. His name is Wein Steinberg, I think. Well, I'll take a look at what the author's name is, Dr. Avraham Steinberg. And this is a work that won several prizes, and one prize from the city of Tel Aviv, and another prize from Proskat, given out by Gold Shalansky. So it's a very prestigious work. And I confess that browsing through this thing, I'm just completely shocked. I'm just really thrown aback by the fact that what word to use, that this kind of drivel can actually, I'm trying to be as mild as possible and as favorable as possible in discussing this, there's a whole section, and I Xeroxed the section for you. Part of the package that you're getting tonight in the back is a Xerox of about 20 some odd pages from this encyclopedia, which is devoted to the topic of Hishtanut HaTva'im, changes in nature, meaning, to put it bluntly, that the rabbis could not possibly have made any kind of scientific mistake. Therefore, for instance, if according to the Talmud, the urethra and vas deferens are separate ducts through to the end of the penis, and nowadays we know that they join together at the prostate gland, what that means is that human anatomy has changed in the last 2,000 years. You're laughing.
They had two left.
Yeah, this is the position stated here on absolutely all the factual and theoretical errors which are easy enough to describe in scientific errors which are easy enough to describe in the Talmud. And so there's a whole 20-some pages of which I Xeroxed you this entire selection from this work put out by Shaarei Tzedek Hospital on Hishtanut HaTva'im, on the changes that have occurred in nature. So I looked around, and then a friend of mine told me not only is there this book, but there's a whole sefer called Hishtanut HaTva'im, a whole book devoted to the issue of changes in physiology and in physics and in anatomy and in medicine and all of these things that have taken place in the world since the time of Solomon. And this is a book also which has, I'll read you the list of the rabbis who give their haskama to the sefer. There's a Rav Avram Shapira, Rav Harashil Yisrael, Rav Shaul Yisraeli, I think he's since departed, Rav Yeshivat Merkaz Harav, Rav Ovadia Yosef Rishon Lezion, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu Rishon Lezion, Rav Shlomo Min Ha'ar, Rav Shunat Bayit Vegan, Rav Zalman Nachem Goldberg, Chaver Beit HaDin Rabbani Yerushalayim, Rav Bill Schwarzman, I didn't realize that he was still active, Rosh Yeshivat Beit HaTalmud, and Rav Avigdor Nevensal, Rav Ha'ir HaKikav Yerushalayim. So this has a very distinguished List.
Are they endorsing the thesis, or are they just saying nice study, nice collection?
They are endorsing the entire book. They make comments, detailed comments here and there.
Because usually these Hascomos are, he's a nice guy, I never read the work.
Yeah, you want me to read one of these Hascomos just to show that I'm not...
That's 11-5, he's a 5-5.
הרי כבוד ידידי הרב הגאון הנעלם מפר גדילי ישיבתנו הקדושה, ישיבת מרכז הרב, רב נריון גוטל, חיבור שערך על עניין שינוי התפעים ובו בירי את השיטות השונות בעניין נרחב זה, שגופי תורה תלויים בו בהרבה מקצועות של הלכה. הרב הגאון המחבר שליטה בדרכו המיוחדת ובסידורו הבהיר ודוגמאות הרבות בש"ס ראשונים ויכולים ביער הדיות אמורות בעניינים אלו למקצועותיהם, ותועלת מרובה תהיה בחיבורו לכל תלמידי חכמים העוסקים בנושא זה. וכל תלמיד חכמי חכמים יודעי דת ודין ימצאו בו דברי חפץ וירחיבו דעתם על ידי החיבור המצוין הזה, וזכות הרבים תלויה בו. They're very firm and docile. All right, and of course, here the issue of deciding whether or not there have been changes in nature are only the only people who are competent to decide if indeed there have been changes in nature are the Rabbanim themselves. So, and then you have to decide what are the halakhic consequences when there are such changes in nature.
Well, has pi changed? It's 3 in the Gemara.
No, it's 3 in the Tanakh. Well, Shlomo HaMelech is 3.
I would not that as a mathematical circle.
But in any event, there all sorts of things have changed. So you're laughing, but I've decided to go through this whole subject of scientific error, scientific beliefs, and so on, and trace what, you know, where I was brought up to believe, and what unfortunately seems to be a universal opinion today. Let me begin by saying that, you know, when I was a kid, we used to learn Ein Yaakov. Mm-hmm. That's a collection of Haggadot HaShas, and in one of the editions of the Ein Yaakov, they printed the statement of Rav Avraham ben Harambam on the Agadot of the Talmud. So as a reality check, let's read what he has to say, which is my first page, because this is something that is so completely unacceptable today that it's unbelievable. Okay? Da, he writes, Ki ata chayav ladat, kol mi sheyotze lahanmid deya yidua, ולישא פני אומרה, ולקבל דעתו בלי עיון בהבנה לעניין אותו דעת אם אמת איתה אם לא, שזהו מן הדעות הרעות. Someone who simply wants to accept an opinion out of respect to for the person who issues this opinion without investigating the truth or falsity of this opinion is a bad mental trait. והוא נאסר מדרך התורה וגם מדרך השכל. And this is prohibited both from the Torah and by common sense. Ve'eino ra'ui midarach ha-seichel, mepnei shehu mitchayev gira'on v'chisaron b'panunut ma shetzarich lahamin bo. Because from the point of view of straight reasoning, this leads to fallacies in investigation and lapses in investigating what one should or should not believe.
So what does that mean,
actually? Midarach ha-Torah, mepnei shenotem midarach and it also violates the laws of the Torah because he's leaving truth and the straight path. In other words, don't simply accept something because somebody says it. Amar Hashem Yisbarach, lo tisa pnei dal, v'lo tahadar pnei gadol, b'tzedek tishpot amitecha. We have been commanded not to either honor the face of the person of the poor, or of the mighty, but rather to simply judge correctly. V'amar lo takiru panim b'mishpat, v'ein hefresh lekabalot otodah la'amida b'lo ra'ayah,
או בין שאמין לאומו ונושא לו פנים ונתון לו, כי האמת איתו בלו ספק מפני שהוא אדם גדול, כהימן וכלכל ודעדה. So there's no difference between giving the honoring the poor in a case, or bending towards the rich man in the case, than accepting somebody's opinion simply and merely because he's a great man. Shekol ze eino ra'aya, aval asur. Ulefi hakdamazu, therefore on the basis of this introduction, lo mitchayev mepnei godel ma'alat chachmei ha-talmud u'tchunatam l'shleimut tchunatam b'pirush ha-torah u'v'dikdukeha v'yosher imreihem b'viyur klaleha u'pratiha shenit'am lahem v'na'amid da'atam b'chol imreihem b'rufuot u'b'chachmat ha-tava v'ha-tchuna. Therefore, he says, there's no reason, because we respect the rabbis because of their ability to interpret the Torah, to believe anything they have to say about medicine or nature or astronomy. Today we believe them when they explain the Torah, because that's their field of expertise. אתה רואה, חכמים במה שלא נתערר להם מדרך סברתם ומסעם ומתנם אומרים, האלוהים אילו אמור יהושע בן נון לא צייתי להם. There's a passage in the Gemara, it's in Chulin Daf Kuftalad, where someone is in the middle of an argument about some technical point, and he says that, he takes an oath saying that even if יהושע בן נון would come here and make this statement, I wouldn't pay any attention to him because you don't decide issues on matters of authority. כלומר, לא הייתי מאמין בו. ויאף על פי שהוא נביא, כיוון שאין בידו יכולת להודיע העניין בכוונה מדרך הסברה, והמסע ומתן, because he's unable to establish his position on the basis of argument and logic, והדרכים שבהם ניתן התלמוד להידרש, and on the basis of acceptable modes of Talmudic reasoning. ודי בזה ראיה ומופת, לא נעננים להם עוד. See, v'day b'zeh, I guess the punctuation is wrong, v'day b'zeh ra'ya mofet. This is enough of a proof that even on Talmudic matters, if there's an accepted mode of argumentation, and then someone comes in, even no matter how great he is, even Yehoshua ben Nun, and makes a statement on the basis of authority rather than on the basis of acceptable reasoning, you're not obligated to pay attention to him. Right? That's a strong statement.
Yeah. No precedent or anything? Don't take that into consideration.
ולא מעניין להם עוד, כיוון שאנחנו מוצאים להם אומרים שלא נתעמת ונתנו לא נתקיימו בגמר דברי רפואות. We find many places in which medical statements in the Talmud simply have not been substantiated and have not been proven to be correct. וכעניין אבן תקומה, like the stone that makes you stand up, שאמרו שמונה להפיל הנפלים, שלא נתעמת. That they had some kind of a stone that prevented miscarriages, and there's no evidence that any such thing, that a magnet, will prevent miscarriages. וכיוצא בזה עניינים רבים שדיברו בפרק שמונה שבצים במסכת שבת וכולי, ובמקומותם התרץ דברים שבחנו אותם הבוחנים ונשארו ביניהם, וסמכו הם עליהם, ולא ידע על אמיתת עיון הרופא האמיתי ולא שכל. And there are a whole lot of things, and I'll come to them when I get to that portion, for example, in Perek Shemona Shvatzim, all kinds of medical statements which are not substantiated, and therefore you don't have to pay any attention to them. Then he goes on in the next paragraph. It's very instructive to read the whole thing, but I'm sure you all read them this as children, but so I'm just reminding you of things from 40 years ago, that he goes ahead and says, well, there are some things that they say that are correct. It doesn't mean that everything they say is wrong, but you have to simply check it out. Do not accept a scientific statement on the basis of authority. And then he brings as an example, in the second page, the discussion in the Gemara and Pesachim about the mode of motion of the sun and the stars, whether the stars are fixed on the heaven which rotates, or whether the sun goes underneath and comes back over. And then he says that it was a very weak argument presented to Rebbe, the argument that the sun must go underneath because the springs are warmer at night than during the day. He says this isn't a very convincing argument, but nevertheless, Rebbe was willing, on the basis of a preponderance of evidence, to reject the position of Chachmei Yisrael and accept the position of Chachmei Umos HaOlam. So that's a good illustration for us. Maybe we'll come to his
final summary at the very bottom of the left-hand column of the next page.
Where is this?
This is reprinted in many of the editions of the Ein Yaakov. I got this out of the Ein Yaakov.
This
Mamar of Rabbeinu Avraham ben HaRambam is reprinted. We used to read it at the beginning of the Ein Yaakov.
What grade level was that? That you learned this?
No. Okay. No. I don't remember. It was something.
It was elementary school.
Yeah, sure. V'hin et barer lanu. You studied it. You didn't study Ein Yaakov. V'hinein et barer lanu ki achachamim zal. Just I'm reading at the very last few lines on the left hand column. Einam ma'ainim hadayot v'lo mabitim otam ela mitzad amitatam u'mitzad rayotehem. That you judge an opinion on the basis of its truth and of its evidence for it, lo mipnei ha'omer oto yihye mi shehiye. Not because someone happens to have said it, no matter who he is. Right? Firm, clear, straightforward position. And you know, you might suspect that he's influenced by his father. This is the clear rationalist position. So maybe you should turn to my page 8. This is at the very top of my page 8. In Maseches Gittin, Daf Samach Ches, there's a whole lot of various folk remedies which are brought in the Gemara. And some people wrote to Rav Shrira Gaon asking him what the words meant. What are all of the various different remedies, what do they mean? So he wrote them a long explanation of what all of these different things mean, but as a preface, before he got to that, as a preamble, he writes, Tzrichin anu lomemar lachon, derabanan lav asuta inu. We are obligated to inform you that rabbis are not doctors, not medical doctors. Umilin ba'alma dachazinan zamenu levatar chad chad katsira amunin, ulav divrei mitzvainu. They collected a whole lot of these remedies one by one and put them all together, but these are not positive commandments. Hilkach, he writes, therefore, lo tismuchun alilein asuta. Do not rely on any of these remedies. Veleka da'avid min hon midam, ela da'vata da'mivdak v'yadaba v'adai machmat kofim b'ki'in da'ahi lo ma'ika l'chom. L'chom. Do not apply any of these remedies until you've checked it out with a medical doctor to see that it does no damage. The leka the leti nafshav sheli de sakon, and doesn't that if you take them, it's not going to cause you serious harm. V'hachein igmuru yatana avot v'savei dilana. This is what we were instructed by our fathers and our grandfathers. Below the mevad min alena suta elamai diite. Only use these remedies which have in fact been verified. So again, there is no hesitation in saying that not all direct statements of medical fact that are found in the Talmud. Are necessarily to be believed. It's a straightforward statement, something that I was brought up on as a kid, but of course now we're in the postmodern era and times have changed.
Kids bring home that little medrash thing, the kids read those stories from the medrash instead of Ein Yaakov.
Amloes is pretty awful.
Yeah, I hope they don't believe all that.
Well, all right, so what I'm going to go through in the next 4 or 5 weeks, one by one, are various different issues of scientific statements, facts, and so on, remedies, prohibitions that are based on, and I'm just going to try to deal with this whole issue in some unified fashion of the response to changes in medical knowledge. So let me begin with something that you might think is the simplest of all problems, and that is the issue of demons, evil spirits, and the like. If you look in the Gemara, you're going to find many, many places in which There are various warnings what to do and what to not to do when it comes to avoid harm from evil spirits, what kind of incantations to say to remedy attacks by evil spirits, and all of these kinds of things. So how are we supposed to relate to that?
Well, why would this introduce changing of nature? That was justify it, to say nature was different then than now or something?
Do you or do you not believe in demons?
You mean there were then, but not now?
Do you?
I mean, I don't know what the
I'm asking,
mean.
First of all,
no,
do you?
I do not.
What are demons?
Demons.
These things that get into your software every so often. And
who's the company? This is what the word is.
All right. Now to answer Mr. Weinstein, the first quote that I have on my page one is a quote from Reb Haigon. In relation to, actually, he was talking about the problem of encountered the difficulty with even numbers, the problem of zugot, which invites a demonic attack. And apparently, by his time, people were not so worried about this particular superstition. And he writes about the shaydim, v'hashta lo nefishi ki'ahu idna. There are not as many of them around today as in the old days, in the time of the Gemara. That's a laconic comment. I would prefer to believe that this is a sarcastic remark saying, of course, we don't know. Reb Haigon lived already in the Muslim period, and undoubtedly, if you just make a sampling of the literature, there are far more demons around in daily life in the Persian literature than there were jinns and various other forms of spiritual bodies in Muslim literature. So it may be a factual statement that there were fewer demons around we're talking about that. We're talking about actual danger coming from demons. And Reb Haigon already introduces something that could be interpreted as Ishtanut HaTeva, namely the general population of demons has decreased.
Endangered species.
It's an endangered species. Right. Okay. The Rambam is very clear. The Rambam has no truck with any of this. Let me just remind you of what he writes in Hilchot Avodah Zarah. Udvarim ha'elu kulam divrei sheker v'chazav hem. This was something which the priests of the idolatrous religion spread as propaganda in order to have people listen to them and follow them. And it's not fitting for Israelites who are wise people to be seduced by any of this complete nonsense. ומחשב בליבו שהן אמת בדברי חכמה אבל התורה אסרתן אינו אלא מן השכלים ומחסרי הדעת ובכלל הנשים והקטנים שאין דעתם שלמה. This is usual misogyny coming to bear here. אבל בעלי החכמה ותמימי הדעת יודעו בראיות ברורות שכל אלו הדברים שעשרה תורה, all of the prohibitions that the Torah gives against magic and worshipping the satyrs and all of that, אינם דברי חכמה אלא תוהו והבל שנמשכו בהם חסרי הדעת ונטשו לו כדרכי האמת בגללם. ומפני זה אמרה תורה כשהזהירה על כל אלו ההבלים תמים תהיה עם השם אלוקיך. So as is his practice, he completely changes the meaning of the word tamim tiyah im Hashem alokach. The word tamim, presumably, according to all other people means that you should be naive, you should be trusting, you should be complete. Not rely on any of these other things, but put all of your faith in God. But he is saying that tamim means that you should be wise and sensible and not be seduced by any of these superstitions. Probably the exact opposite of the meaning that others would give to that particular phrase.
Naive mean it?
Tam, yeah.
Naive, would that be it?
Yeah. Okay. Complete trusting is probably the best word. Okay? And now, if you take a look in the Rambam, absolutely every halacha that is entirely based on such notions as ruach ra'ah or anything else, he just completely eliminates. And though there are a few of them which he simply gives an alternative reason for. All right. So, for example, washing your hands three times in the morning to eliminate the evil spirit that hangs over them, he just doesn't bring that halacha. He says you have to wash your hands before davening, but there's no law that you have to wash your hands three times just on account of getting up to remove the evil spirit that's hovering over you when you are asleep. The Gemara in Pesachim says that Ochlim mashkim tachat hamita afilu mechupin b'kli barzel ruach ra'ah shava aleihem. That even if you have a food in a pot with an iron cover on it,
under the bed,
evil spirits hover over this food. So therefore, you shouldn't put food under the bed. When the Rambam brings that halacha, he says, you shouldn't put a stew, he doesn't say food and drink, but just simply some open pot with a stew in it. Maybe you're busy cooking, you don't have any room to put the pot down, and the only free place is under the bed. So to get it out of the way, you're putting the pot with the stew in it under the bed. Don't do that. Shema yipol bo dehavacha mazik v'hu eino roeh. Because some dangerous substance might fall into the pot, some poisonous substance might, or unpleasant substance might fall into the pot from under the bed. Therefore, it's not a good idea to put something under the bed where you can't keep an eye on it. So in all of the occult nature of this has been completely eliminated and replaced with a rational explanation. The Rivet, of course, objects and says, "Gam zeb Yerushalmi mufarshim mishum ruach ra'ah." The reason that is given for this prohibition is not because some unpleasant stuff will fall into the pot, but because of evil spirits. Or, for example, on the famous Mishnah that we recite every Friday night of the phrase ruach ra'ah means evil spirit. You want to put out the light because you're afraid of some being bothered by an evil spirit. The Rambam gives an entirely different interpretation. He interprets ruach ra'ah to mean a mental state of mental depression. Someone is melancholy and depressed, and he feels that contact with people causes him to feel ill, and the light bothers him, and he wants to sit quietly, and they're not in the dark. That is what ruach ra'ah means. So again, he simply changes the plain meaning of the phrase because he just doesn't believe in any of this nonsense. The other two or three authorities who absolutely reject the existence of demons and such are the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra on the pasuk which says, "V'lo yizbuchu ol la'se'irim," he writes, "La'se'irim heim ha'shedim." They're called Se'irim ba'avur she'yistaer ha'aguf ha'ro'eh otam. That someone who sees them becomes so frightened that his hair stands on end. V'ha'karov, a more likely explanation, ba'avur she'yiru otam ha'mishuga'im k'dmut Se'irim. The insane people who actually see these things see them in the form of satyrs. Asher heim zonim, ki kol mi she'mevakesh otam u'mamein behem zoneh mitachat elokav. Anyone who believes in the existence of Shevim or seeks them out is whoring against his God. So according to the Ibn Ezra, again, like the Rambam, such things as Shevim do not exist. If you take a look in the Ramban on that particular passage, you will find that he quotes the Ibn Ezra, rejects this particular position, and goes into a lengthy explanation of how the Shedim are constituted out of two of the four elements. So I'm making the point that this position of rejecting belief and superstition, even though these superstitions are
found all over the place in the Gemara is not such a widespread notion, but I'm practically running out of the people who take this position. Another person who takes this position is the Me'iri. The Me'iri in various places, and the Masechet Sanhedrin and elsewhere, simply says, like the Rambam, that these things don't exist. And at one point he even tries to engage in a little bit of apologetics. Instead of saying, as we learned several years ago with the Rambam, that it's conceivable that a rabbi simply makes a mistake. Remember in his letter on astrology to Marseille, he wrote that you find some people in the Gemara who believe in astrology, so they're just plain wrong. I mean, it doesn't bother him to say, like we just saw in Rabbi Avraham ben HaRambam, that it's conceivable that there will be error. But the Me'iri tries to explain it away. At my bottom of my page, V'bekama mokamot bi'alnu, שבאותם הזמנים היה העם נמשכים אחרי דברים המוניים. That in those days, that is the time of the Gemara, the populace was drawn to superstitions, like incantations and various other superstitious acts. וכל שלא היה בהן סרח עבוד הזרה ודרכי הנביא, whenever these superstitious acts were not, didn't have a tinge of idolatry or witchcraft, lo chashashu behem chachamim liyakvav. The Rabbanim didn't make the effort to eliminate them. V'kol shekein, b'mesh shehaya tiv'am makabel b'inyan chizuk ha'chulsha. And certainly not when the beliefs were so strong that they would affect the people physically, that there would be a psychosomatic effect as a result of this belief. Someone who believes in these superstitions will be affected by them, and someone who doesn't won't. So he says that indeed, perhaps some people were affected by these superstitions, but it was as a result of their belief in it in the first place. Okay. An example of this type of superstition, that the populace would be wary of eating things in doubles, in even numbers. They would be scared of even numbers. When the Chachamim enacted precisely four cups of wine at the Seder night, מצד אותו ההבלים הצלחו לרוב לתת טעם לדבריהם. Because of this widespread accepted superstition, which most of the populace believed in, they had to give an explanation of how they could order you to drink four glasses of wine when in fact it's dangerous. That's why they said that they interpreted the phrase Leil Shimurim, a night where we're on guard, to mean Laila Hashisha Shamur Bahalech Ubanin Hamazikin, a night which is protected against the demons.
Exactly.
All right. All right. So that's the end of the modern period with the Me'iri. So when is that? 13th, 14th century. And now we enter into, I guess, what's called the postmodern period. For example, the Radvaz is asked about consultation. People who wanted to consult with and commune with demons, and he strenuously prohibits this. It's straight out also according to him. Other opinions say that it's not so prohibited, but he says that it's prohibited. And in the course of a tshuva, I could read the whole tshuva, but the punchline comes after the tshuva is over, he quotes this passage from the Me'iri, or rather a different passage from the Me'iri in Sanhedrin, who says that there's no such things as demons and it's all nonsense. And then he writes at the end, "V'lo tachshedeni, mipnei shekatavti lashon ha-Me'iri, she'ani makchish metziut ha-shkedim. Don't suspect me because I simply am quoting the Me'iri's position that I deny the existence of demons. Ki ani ma'amin b'chol devrei chazal, afilu sicha kala shelem. Because I believe in all of the words of Chazal, even in their casual conversation. Kol sheken shaktuvim pashtehem morim al mitziuta. Certainly, when the simple interpretation of the biblical passage indicates that they exist, lo yizbuchu odet zipcheyem lasirim, or yizbuchu l'sheidim lo eloah, and so on and so forth. So therefore, whether whether he was saying this for political reasons or because he didn't want to be suspected of being a rationalist and not believing in something that the Gemara says, or whether he honestly did believe in shaving because it says so in the Gemara, he felt compelled at the end of the tshuva, simply by having quoted the Meiri, to protect himself against being suspected that he shared the Meiri's opinion on the non-existence of shaving.
I mean, the Pesuk in Moshe Bechor is if they have a Shivrim, doesn't say that Shivrim exist, only that people think they exist.
Are you arguing with me or with the Radvaz?
I don't understand that.
Okay.
Look,
for example, you could bring a whole lot of tales having to do with consultation with witches, and so this argument may not be strong, but if you wanted to make a case, you could make a case from scriptures too. You don't have to. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, now we move even more into the postmodern era with the Vilna Gaon. As a preparation to the Vilna Gaon's position, let me cite something from the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, someone who's bitten by a scorpion, you can incant the incantation over him. You can even do this incantation on Shabbat, even though incanting over a scorpion bite has no medical effect. Ho'il umusukanhu, since he is in mortal danger, heitiva'o kidei shelo titaref da'ato alav. This is permitted in order to set his mind at ease. Right? This is a straight quote from the Rambam. All the Gemara says is that if someone, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, all that the Gemara says is that if someone is bitten by a scorpion, you're allowed to say an incantation over him even on Shabbat. This additional comment of
even though
it doesn't do any good, it sets his mind at ease, is the Rambam's own editorial addition. And the Shulchan Aruch here, as he frequently does, just straight quotes the Rambam without any change, including the Rambam's editorial position on shaving, on lefashim. And then the Vilna Gaon becomes furious. This was on my next page. Here is the famous quote from the Vilna Gaon attacking the Rambam. The Afalpi, the Vilna Gaon writes, Harambam, this statement, the Afalpi she'eino mo'il klum, is a direct quote from the Rambam. The Katav came to Peruch Shamishnah Perek Dalet Yerot Kochavim. And he similarly wrote that incantations and amulets and various other things are of no effect in his Peruch Shamishnayot Avodah Zarah. All of the people that succeeded the Rambam, that followed the Rambam, disagreed with him. Because we find many incantations actually stated in the Gemara. But he was drawn after the philosophy. Another text that says, after the accursed philosophy. And therefore he wrote, Shekshafim, Veshemot, Ulochashim, Veshedim, Ukmeyot, that witchcraft and holy names and incantations and demons and amulets, Hakol hu sheker. All of this is false. Aval kvar hiku oto al kadkato, that he already has been hit on the head by those who followed him. Shaharei matzino harbe masiyot bigmara al pi shemot ukshafim. There are various places in the Gemara which involve tales having to do with holy names and witches and so on. And philosophy has seduced him by its wiles. To explain the Gemara with various as not literally, but and to uproot the plain meaning of the text. V'chas v'shalom, eini ma'amin bahem, v'lo mehem, v'lo mehamonam, ela kol hadvarim hem kipshuta. So the Vilna Gaon says that since amulets and incantations and demons and so on are mentioned in the Gemara, it's an article of faith that we must believe in their existence. He doesn't believe in the philosophers.
Oh.
Okay.
I believe his interpretation is closer to what the Gemara means than the Rambam's.
Well, the Rambam is not afraid of saying that the Gemara is just wrong. But what he's saying, that he is saying, is that since, like, it was mildly put by the Radbaz, who was defending his own position, but here he's just straight out attacking the Rambam. Rambam, who maintains that witches and demons and such don't exist, has obviously been seduced by Western philosophy, and I will have no part of that rationalist position. Okay? All right, that set the tone in this postmodern period. For example, if we take a look in the Malbim, so that's the generation after the Vilna Gaon, two generations after the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon died at the end of the 18th century, and the Malbim was born at the beginning of the 19th century. In his book on the Shulchan Aruch, when it comes to the laws of Netilat Yadayim, he raises the issue as to why, in fact, the Rambam doesn't bring this requirement of washing the hands three times in the morning in order to drive away the evil spirits. And he says, "Umitam zeh hishmit hatam shel ruach ra'ah." For this reason, he eliminates he eliminates the reason of evil spirits. The svirulei de eino matsui hayom, because he, the Rambam, is of the opinion that evil spirits are no longer around. As Danny says, they're extinct today. It's not that he's sort of mollifying the Rambam's position. He says that this is all a lot of nonsense and superstition. He says that the Rambam says that they're no longer around today. And when you look in the Rambam's Yad HaChazaka, Tereshe Kol Sifro Lo Af Gam Davar Mikol HaAzharot HaSkuliyot HaMuzkarin B'Shas. You won't find a single mention of any of the occult warnings that's emanating from the occult which are mentioned in the Shas. Mepnei Sheledato Nishtanu HaTivim. Because, according to the Rambam's opinion, times have changed and these occult dangers no longer exist. We're dealing with people that we have a respect for, right? Vilna Gaon, the Malbim. Let's go to someone who Ginsberg characterizes, Louis Ginsberg characterizes as a rationalist, and that's with Zvi Hirsch Chaius, who certainly did believe in demons, but writing about the Rambam, he writes, "Aval ha'emet Torah darka, sheharambam halach l'shitato she'ein mitzuyin b'yameinu," that the Rambam followed his own opinion that these demons no longer exist in our day. Amnam yirato kadma l'chachbato, but the Rambam didn't want to state this belief explicitly, and therefore he simply dropped all the laws deriving from the occult. So now Zvi Hirsch Chaius is not only saying that the Rambam really believes in demons, but they don't exist today, but he's adding to it that the Rambam was a pious Jew who would never want to say anything in contradiction to a Talmudic opinion. They're converting the Rambam into a former Yid, in some form or other. At least
the Rambam was at peace or taught that they don't exist. But in
reality, they don't. First of all, the Rambam didn't believe that they never existed, but like Danny said, that they've become an extinct species. And but not only that, he doesn't want to have a direct fight with the Gemara on this issue of saying that they no longer exist, because this would be disrespectful to the Gemara, and therefore he simply eliminates them entirely, avoids the question by not bringing them into his code.
He said clearly it was Havel and all that
before. Are you arguing with me or with Zvi Hirsch Chaius?
Oh, I see, yeah.
I'm just telling you what it said. At least Rav Yosef Shaul Natanson, who is a contemporary, and uses almost identical language, so one must have read the other, because the language is also identical, gets the story straight. This is from a tshuva in which Rabbi Yosef Shaul Matinson and Shaul Emeshiv has to deal with a problem of insanity. If you remember when we studied the laws of insanity, the Gemara in Chagiga mentions three signs of insanity, but then offers alternative explanations, right? It said that a person might be dwelling in the cemetery because he wants to commune with the evil spirits.
Or he might be running around in such a way because he's really been converted into a werewolf. If you remember those passages from the Gemara, and the Rambam doesn't bring any of this because, right? And what Rav Nathan says, Elohai met Torah Darka, Shaharambam Halach Rashitato, Goloha Min B'Shevim U'Vachol Eile, Amnon Yerato Kodemet L'Chachmato, V'lo Ratzalona She'en Oma Nimlazim. He was too shy to say that he didn't believe in any of this, and therefore just didn't bring these laws rather than... okay? All right, one last item impinging on the really postmodern era. The Rabbi Avadia Yosef got an actual question. Namely, what to do when someone indeed put some food under the bed. Right? You left some food under the bed, are you allowed to use the food or not? Okay, so as you're familiar with Rav Avadia Yosef's method, he just brings in an encyclopedic detail all the various positions. I didn't bring the chula head upstairs. If you like, we can read it. The first thing that when he hits the Vilna Gaon, he's really shocked by the language that the Vilna Gaon can use against the Rambam. I mean, how can the Vilna Gaon speak so disrespectfully to the Rambam? So he says that there's some people who maintain that the Vilna Gaon didn't really say this, that some guy put it in.
The evil spirit took possession of
it. Some typesetter or somebody put it in. But then he actually checks the matter out and points out that there's evidence from David Luria and others that they actually saw this language in the very handwriting of the Vilna Gaon. So he really did say such a terrible thing. But after having settled that the Vilna Gaon really did say all of this, he sort of calms down in this tshuva and goes on to list all the various pros and cons. I mean, if you're going to decide whether demons do or do not exist, whether Ruach Ra is or is not a danger, you just take a look at all the sources and see what the majority rule is. If most acceptable authorities declare that demons exist, then they exist, and we have to worry about them, and if they don't, they don't. Even if they do exist, the problem is...